To the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine. I'm one of your two Tuesday Morning Show hosts, and I'm not joined today by Phil Huff, although I expect to be in the future as we're doing less and less Zooming. So shout out to Phil. Looking forward to interviewing with you in the near future. This morning, we've got a great interview. I'm going to get into that in just a moment. It's with Kyle Nagy of the U of I, and I'll introduce him more fully in a moment. But before that, I think we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in the weather scene. Looks like we're going to be having a bit of a cool down. I guess it had to happen, everybody. Fall is coming, and that is what normally happens. Not much rain yet, but cooling temps. Today we can expect a high of 68, low of 33 every morning, looking more and more like frost. Same for tomorrow and pretty much the same through the week. And is there a slight chance of rain coming? Yes, finally on Friday. So we'll all look forward to that. And hazy, folks. As you remember, I interviewed the Department of Environmental Quality a few weeks ago and learned quite a bit about where to look for accurate air quality readings. And I did go to Idaho DEQ, learned that it's around 100. So our smoke has not ended yet. That's not healthy for people with compromised lungs, and not even that great for those of us with great lungs. We're about to talk a little more about the weather because I've got a great, great guest this morning. And that is, and I'm about to introduce him, I'm going to introduce him right now. Good morning, Kyle Nagy. You are, let's get your title right, you are the Superintendent and Orchard Operations Manager at the University of Idaho Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center. Hello, Kyle.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you bet. How did I do? That was a mouthful.
That is a mouthful, for sure.
I think so. Well, it's not our first interview. We've had you on at least a couple of times before, and it's really an interview that I look forward to because what could be more fun than talking about organic research, apples, the center north of town, north of Schweitzer? It's just a really interesting topic. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, before we launch into the whole meat of the interview, there is a reason that you wanted to interview this week, and it's an upcoming event. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we're back to holding our public apple tasting out at the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center. We held our first apple tasting for the public in 2019, and then, of course, COVID came along, and we had to postpone those plans. So we're finally able to bring it back, and we're really excited to have the community out to taste some apples.
And it's this weekend,
upcoming. Yes, it's this upcoming Saturday. We're going to be open from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. It's an open house event, so you can come anytime between the 1 and 4. And we're hoping to have between 30 and 40 different varieties of apples to taste. So a little more than you're used to seeing on the grocery store shelf.
Yes, and many of them heirloom apples, but not all.
Yeah, yep. We specialize in heritage varieties. So we have a lot of varieties from colonial times, a lot from the East Coast. But then we also do have some of the more modern varieties. We have a Gala and some Honeycrisp. We specialize in these heritage varieties and organic and sustainable production methods.
And I need to get my terminology right. It's heritage, not heirloom. Tomatoes are heirloom.
It goes back and forth. It depends who you're talking to, but we've kind of latched on to heritage.
Yeah, I like it. I like that name. Well, Kyle, for listeners who haven't heard you on other interviews, can you tell us just a little bit about you, how you came to be here in Sandpoint and how you came to be managing the organic center?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm originally from Wisconsin, as I'm sure some of you listeners can tell from my voice.
I don't hear a thing, Kyle.
I often get asked if I'm Canadian out here.
Funny.
But my now wife and I moved here in 2009 after getting done with school at the University of Minnesota. And I was lucky enough to find this position at the Orchard back when it was part of a nonprofit called Center for Organic Studies. And then the property was acquired by the university in the summer of 2018. And as I tell everyone, I was the old mule who was sold with the farm. So
I came
with the property. Yeah,
that's really right. Good. That's a great story. And so then it did become University of Idaho property, and that's when you started thinking about organic research into the apples.
Yeah, definitely. So when the university acquired the orchard in 2018, we already had somewhere around maybe 400 trees in the ground. And since then, we've expanded and we're at around 640 trees at this point. So we have a lot of apples out there and 68 varieties for those 640 trees.
And of the 640, are most of them now producing apples?
Yeah, yep. We're even our younger trees are starting to produce. We have, I guess, our new planting, our newest planting is a block of pears. We have a Yubline pear, which is an old Bulgarian pear, and then also a Comice pear, which is a French pear that's known for its culinary quality.
Wow. I think that's very exciting, expanding out from apples and into pears. Kyle, this facility is really something else. Describe it for us, for the listeners.
Yeah, it really is a beautiful facility. And in looking at the greater University of Idaho facilities, it's definitely a gemstone up here in North Idaho. We have the property is about 66 acres. We have the 8-acre certified organic orchard, and then we have an additional 20 acres that's certified organic for research purposes. And then we also have this big, beautiful conference hall with classroom space, office space, and then some larger rooms for conferences and that type of thing. We also have on-site housing for our summer interns, and then we have a large bunkhouse as well that's been utilized by 4-H groups and some classes coming up from the Moscow campus as well.
Okay, and I think you've undersold the main facility a little bit. It is really beautiful.
It really is a beautiful facility. It incorporated a lot of local materials when it was built. So there's a lot of local timber products, and the fireplaces are constructed with local rock. So it's really a nice tribute to North Idaho, I feel like.
Yeah, I think I would feel lucky to work in a facility like that and be able to enter and interact with that really beautiful architecture on a regular basis.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
It's definitely not a bad place to go to work every day.
Absolutely not. Hey, what are, if you haven't, I don't think you've quite explained missions and goals for the research center. Tell us about that.
So I'd say the biggest thing is that we're the only agricultural research station within the university's wide system of a network of ag stations that is devoted to organic and sustainable agricultural practices. And most people wouldn't think of Idaho as a organic-minded state, since most of our agriculture is conventional and most of it takes place in southern Idaho. But we have an outstanding community in North Idaho that is really passionate about small-scale agriculture and organic and sustainable agriculture.
Yeah, so. I couldn't agree more. It really seems of high interest around the Sandpoint area, and it's got to start somewhere and has to start, why not start with the university? That's where we learn about things, and then you'll be able to disseminate information. So I'm proud to have you all up here. Okay, what are high priorities? We know a little bit about the goals, but what are you prioritizing these days?
So part of our main priorities is getting more graduate researchers and faculty researchers pursuing organic specific research. And there's so much funding out there these days for organic research, and a lot of that research requires that the actual research takes place on a certified organic farm. So by having a certified organic agricultural station in the university system, that opens up a lot of opportunities for new grants that can be pursued for research.
Sure. Do you have some examples? What's going on?
So we have a soil health and organic production systems research project that's headed by Jody Johnson Maynard, who is the department head of the soil and water systems. Then we also have, don't get too excited, but we do have some huckleberries planted out there. They just were planted this summer, so we're just working on getting them established at this point. But the researchers that we're working with on that are actually looking at a root weevil that targets the huckleberries, and they're looking at ways to organically manage for that pest.
Oh, interesting. And I don't know if I'm correct in this or not, but huckleberries aren't really commercially produced, or are they?
Yeah, not really commercially produced. There was at the old R&E station here in Sandpoint, there was a researcher that was heavily looking into that, but I'm not sure that any commercial varieties came out of that research, but there's definitely still people working on it and people interested in huckleberries.
Yeah, neat. So that will that should become interesting over time.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Another really, really big grant for the university was recently acquired or recently awarded to Jody as well and her team. But that is the largest grant in University of Idaho history. And it's targeting climate smart agriculture in Idaho, which is really something that the state really needs to start paying attention to. And I believe that grant is up to $55 million that's going to be utilized in the state for climate smart agriculture practices.
Wow, and may help the entire world if it goes well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's all kinds of great projects that could come out of that.
That's exciting. Well, that's a high point. Are there other
yeah.
projects, or is that pretty much it?
That I'd say that's definitely one of the high points. But there's also a soil. It's an Ecotron, I believe it's called, and it's a deep soil survey. So most soil surveys around the world are done in the first few feet of the topsoil. But the university has acquired funding for this project that's going to look at deep soil ecology. And that's this type of research is only conducted in a few other places around the world. So this is a really good opportunity for Idaho.
Yeah. Well, as we learn more and more about the connections of plants and root systems and, you know, what is deep and what is shallow, that would be another extremely interesting project.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's they're currently working on the facility for that right now, but it's a big undertaking.
Yeah. Wow. That is a lot of exciting research happening.
Yeah.
More than I expected.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
That's neat. Tell me a little bit more about how the students get involved.
Yeah. So we work with student researchers. Quite a few graduate student researchers are coming up. We've worked with some that are looking at that soil health project, others that are looking at just soils across North Idaho. But I'd say one of the best programs we have right now is our summer internship program. We usually bring on 2 to 3 undergraduate interns from the Moscow campus. But the internship is also open to students from other college or Idaho universities. We have them up here for the summer. It's usually goes mid-May through mid-August. And what I really try to focus on is getting these interns some real hands-on experience. They're getting all their classroom experience done down on campus. But when we have them for the summer, we want them to get their hands dirty and learn how to grow plants and learn how to run some machinery that's really necessary for a lot of these operations.
Yeah, so they really understand what it's all about. And a little almost free labor, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's not free. We have it's a paid internship program, and they have free housing on site, which is much better than the opportunity that I had as an undergrad when I was pursuing internships.
I can imagine, and given the housing crisis in Sandpoint, those are some lucky students.
Oh yeah, Beautiful. Definitely. And part of the way I advertise this internship is, who wouldn't want to spend a summer in Sandpoint?
And there at your
yeah,
at your facility,
yeah, for sure.
I can't think of a nicer place to be for a summer. That I bet that works very well.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So students, what a wonderful opportunity if you can get the internship. Did you mention as we began or just before we began the interview that you've also been able to hire a full-time
person? Yes, so we've been able to hire Kent Youngdahl, who's a local boy here from Sandpoint, which has been a really great opportunity. He actually started as an intern and kept coming back summer after summer. We tell everyone we just couldn't get rid of him.
Like you.
Yeah, yep, exactly. he graduated his undergrad program. He was one of the first students through the university's new sustainable food systems program. And we were able to get him to come back up here after he graduated. And we were just able to hire him on in a full-time year-round position. So it's really value to have him up here.
Yeah, nice to be able to have someone that you've worked with and, you know, understand the way he works and how y'all work together.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a good experience. And meeting him when he was 18 and now he's 24, it's really been amazing to see him grow as a human.
Man, that is a great story. Well, congratulations to Kent on the position. Kyle, there are other things that happen at the facility. We know you're growing apples and we know that research is going on, but that beautiful facility is used for other purposes sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. We hold a lot of extension classes through the extension office that's near the fairgrounds. A lot of those classes are held out at the Sandpoint Organic Ag Center. We're getting groups coming from campus as well. But we're also working quite a bit with the community here. If anyone has been in that building before, they have seen all the beautiful quilts that we have on the rugs or on the walls throughout the entire building. And that's through a collaboration with the Pondre Arts Council, which has really been great. Recently they came and swapped out the quilts. So there was a few days where there weren't any quilts on the walls and the building felt completely empty. So I'm really happy to be able to work with the Pondre Arts Council to display some of this local art and also to just beautify our space.
I couldn't agree more. It's beautiful. So if a nonprofit needed to hold a meeting, they could just get in touch and see if there was an opening in the schedule.
Yeah. Yep. So we hold events for nonprofits and educational events. So we're not doing any private events. We get requests for weddings and stuff out there, but that's just not what we're about out there. So, but it's been great to work with the local community and meet all the people from that are working in these nonprofits. We worked with a few different local charities and the Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust over the summer. For the Let's Picnic program, which was providing bagged lunches for children who don't typically have nutritious lunches at home throughout the summer. And I'd have to check, but I think it was nearly 7,000 bagged lunches that came out of our kitchen over the summer. And just such a dedicated group of rotating charity workers that were coming through and volunteering their time to pack all these lunches. It's really an amazing program they had.
Yeah. Did the kids come there or did you ship the lunches off somewhere else?
The lunches were distributed out at different schools in the area, but the Organic Ag Center has a big commercial kitchen that they were we allowed them to use just so that we could play a part in giving back to the community in this way.
That is fabulous. I've seen that kitchen and it is to die for.
Yeah. Yep. And we also hold some classes in the kitchen. Amy Robertson, who is the extension educator in Boundary County, she's held pressure cooking and canning classes there, as well as general food safety and water safety classes as well.
Yeah. What a great location to have that kind of a class. Wonderful. Well, we've talked a lot about what's going on at the Research Center. I think we'll take a short song break, and then we're going to come back and focus more on this weekend's events. So, listeners, we are about to hear a request from Kyle, and this is Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan with Girl. A great song. I love Johnny Cash mixed up with Bob Dylan. For those of you listeners just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I am Julie Calamine, and I am just as lucky as can be to be joined this morning by Kyle Nagy, who manages the wonderful U of Idaho Organic Research Center up here in Sandpoint. Hello again, Kyle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. So during the song break, we realized there are a couple of more things we wanted to talk about before we jump into the events of the upcoming weekend. And it's a little more about what's happening, what's being grown. Kyle and I were talking about the fact that it's not just apples. There's a lot going on. Kyle, let's talk about that a bit further.
Yeah, definitely. So we're known specifically for our orchard. So we have all those great heritage apple varieties, but we also do some pears, as we discussed, but you pick raspberries through the summer, which has been a huge hit the last few years. This past summer wasn't a great raspberry production year for us, since The raspberries were producing on the canes that grew last summer. And as you probably remember, last summer was a dry, tough, hot summer. So this year wasn't a great raspberry production year, but all the canes that came up this year are looking really healthy. So I think next year should be great.
Oh, good. Are raspberries susceptible to late frosts like apples?
I'm not too worried about frosts with the raspberries at this point. They're already kind of on their way for the winter. One thing I'd like to mention about raspberries is we prune our raspberries whenever we have time to because we're so busy. But best practice is actually waiting until spring to prune back your raspberries and remove your old canes. Because over the winter, those dying canes are actually sending energy back into the root system that can be used by the growing canes the following year.
That's so interesting. I think a lot of us might want to just rush out and get them taken care of in the fall.
For sure, yeah. There's little downside to doing it in the fall. And as I was saying, we do it when we have time because there's just so much to do. But if you can hold off, spring is a better time to prune your raspberries.
I'm a little bit of a lazy gardener, so maybe that won't be too tough for me. I'll put that on my last there lowest priority for the winter spring.
Yeah, and then we did U-pick for pie cherries this year, which is the first time we've done U-pick pie cherries. I really wasn't sure how much demand there was going to be for pie cherries, and I put out a post on our Facebook page, and within a day, I had 30 people messaging me asking about pie cherries.
Wow.
So we ended up opening our pie cherries for U-pick, and they got picked out the following morning. So it was really impressive. Great to have the community come out for that kind of thing.
That's great support. And I just have to ask you, did they have to get on ladders? Could they pick from the ground?
So our pie cherries is it's a variety called English Morello, which is a small variety, a small statured variety. So it's almost more of a large shrub. It gets around 8 feet wide and 8 feet tall, and it can be a prolific producer. So it's nice that we don't allow anyone to climb ladders just because of university policies. But it's great to have those. And that's a variety that I would suggest for home gardeners and home orchardists as well, just because it is such an easy size to manage for a cherry tree.
I just noted it, so I'll be looking for you for sources for English Morello.
Definitely.
Cool. And more goes on. You're managing the property with some animals, too.
Yeah, yep. So this was our second year of bringing livestock onto the site. Originally our goal was tansy control. So I'm sure a lot of local gardeners have issues with common tansy, and it's one that can actually be toxic if cattle and horses eat it in much of a quantity, but sheep and goats can handle it. So we were bringing in the sheep to control our tansy. But we've since then turned it into a rotational grazing program and a multi-species rotational grazing program, which is a really hot topic in regenerative agriculture right now. So we have a 4-acre pasture that's divided into 10 paddocks, and the sheep are rotated into a new paddock every 3 days. So it's a pretty labor-intensive process, but it results in much better forage throughout the growing season. So by the time those sheep are back to that original paddock that they had grazed, that paddock's had 27 days to rest and regrow. So it really makes a big difference for the forage. And then we have the chickens in rotation in a mobile coop provided by Pack River Farms that follows them in the rotation, and the chicken help disperse or distribute the manure. And then they can also help with parasites and pests. So And now the real goal of this project is a demonstration to show people what's possible, and we're also looking at soil health. So there's a lot of good that can come out of these research projects.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious. We hear so much talk about rotational grazing with goats, but you guys chose sheep.
Yeah. Yep. We went back and forth between sheep and goats, but I think one of the deciding factors was that everyone was telling us that goats are escape artists.
Oh.
So they find a way to get out of any enclosure, where the sheep are a little easier to keep contained. So we thought sheep was a good place to start for us.
Sure. And I was also going to ask you, it seems to me goats like shrubs and tree branches. And I'm not sure if sheep do, but you'd hate to have your apple branches and trunks being munched on.
For sure. Yeah. Yep. And that was something we looked at as well. And it didn't... With the browsing that can happen, we decided to keep them out of the orchard. So they're just in the field on the south side of the orchard. So, yeah, I'm afraid if we let the sheep in the orchard, it could get ugly real quick.
Yeah. Sheep or goats. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time for us to move on to what is sort of our main topic of the interview. What's happening over the upcoming weekend? Tell us about everything.
Yeah, we have quite a bit going on this time of year out at the Ag Center. So... the first thing I want to highlight is our apple tasting. It's a public apple tasting going on this upcoming Saturday, the 22nd, from 1 to 4 p.m. It's a self-guided apple tasting, so you'll come in anytime between that 1 and 4. I'm really hoping everybody doesn't show up right away at the beginning because it might be a bit of a zoo. But we're going to have hopefully 30 to 40 different varieties of apples to taste, and we're planning to have score sheets. So you'll pick up a score sheet, go through and rate all the apples, and then we're asking you to leave that score sheet for us, and then I'll compile all that information, and we'll put out a top 10 list, and I'll be sure to share that with you so you can share that with your listeners as well.
Will do. And now I have to make a disclaimer, and that is that I attended the very first one of these, and I think you had about the same number of varieties that were being tasted. And I did fill out the sheet, and then I made a photo of it. And then I later talked to you, Kyle, about where you acquired some of your trees, and you gave me the name Trees of Antiquity. So I got their catalog. I ordered 4 trees based on that tasting. And finally, this year, I've had my first one making apples. That's the Liberty. And I love it. It is so good.
Well, it's great to hear that this apple tasting inspired you to plant some of these heritage
100%
varieties.
It did. I loved it. And I had one die, so I'm down to 3. I think it was the voles.
Oh, yeah. Yep. The voles and the gophers can definitely cause some issues.
That's right. Well, all right. So we have that happening. And it's really kind of a happy and just a great social event. People really share and talk about what apples taste good to them. And we're not all the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think in the 2019 tasting, the last public apple tasting we had around 250 people come through in 3 hours. So it was good to get that many people just out there to see the facility and see what we're doing out there. But yeah, I totally agree that everyone's tastes are different. I recently was down on campus giving an apple tasting for a plant science lab. And we did 4 labs throughout the day, and I think it was 10 different apples we tasted, and just the range of different tastes that people have. We'd ask at the end what were your favorites, and they were all over the board. We'd almost always have all those 10 apples mentioned by at least one person in the class. So it's really amazing how diverse our taste profiles are.
It's so true. And there's sort of some hot spots, right? Like tartness versus sweetness, texture, all that.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of the sweet apples. I'm not big on tart apples, but yeah, sweet apples is where I'm usually looking.
You and I are not living in the same orchard land then. I like tart and sweet mixed together.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Everybody likes something a little different.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then some people like their apples for making pies or canning or applesauce, and that can be a different apple also.
For sure, yeah. With all these different varieties, there's some that are specific to cider making that you wouldn't want to take a big bite out of. And there's others that are great for baking that have a little denser flesh that hold their form a little bit better through the baking process. But it seems like there is an apple out there for every purpose you can come up with.
What about the lowly crab apple? Is it still around?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we have we grow a few different crab apples. One is a Wixen crab apple, and that is just a prolific producer. It's one that the branches are hanging low during the harvest every year, and that's one that we're mostly using for cider. But another variety that it's not a straight crab apple, but our strawberry parfait has a crab apple in its parentage, and that's a great eating apple. It's just never going to be a large apple. So it's really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually like a middle, medium or smaller sized apple because you can always have another apple, but what do you do when you've got a great big apple and you don't feel like finishing it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the issue. Cause there's so many of the apples that you see on the shelves are
huge.
Just huge. Yeah.
Yeah. They really are.
Yeah. And most of these varieties aren't supposed to be that large. We have some large varieties. We have one that's called a 20 ounce that, we've never actually got a 20 ounce apple off of there, but we've been I think around 18.5 ounces.
Oh boy!
So that's a large apple, and then another variety called an Alexander that gets nearly that large as well. So there's an old cookbook that calls for a single Alexander apple to make an apple pie because they're so large.
That's pretty funny. That is a funny one. So anyway, there's something I've missed when we came back from song break, and it was to talk about the apple harvest this year. It's big compared to last year.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a good year for us. Last year, we caught a hard frost in the middle of our bloom on May 19th. We dropped to 27 degrees for just a few hours, and that was enough to knock down a lot of our blooms. So last year, our harvest was down 80% from the previous year, which is a big hit. But this year, it's been a good year. It was we were thinking it was going to be an even larger year based on our bloom this spring. But if you remember this spring, it was a little cool and a little rainy. I think part of it was too cool for a lot of our pollinators to be active. And the other part of it, I really think we had some torrential rains during our bloom where I think a lot of our pollen ended up on the ground as well.
Yeah, believe it.
But regardless, it's turned into a really good year for us, albeit a late year. With the frost holding off so long, we're harvesting apples much later than we have in the past. But we're on par for a record year. I think we just crossed over 8,000 pounds yesterday.
Oh, wow. When we were emailing back and forth, you told me you just picked like over 2,000 pounds of apples.
With all those different varieties, they're all ripening at different times, but it seems like there's a sweet spot where we get a week or two where a good portion of our varieties come in, and those are our weeks that we're running around harvesting like crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess we can literally say you are picking tons of apples. That's
yeah,
cool.
For sure.
Very neat. All right, well, we need to get back to the rest of the weekend because you've got more going on than just the tasting.
Yeah, so the tasting is this weekend. The following weekend, the 29th, I'm going to be down at the Moscow Farmers Market, and we're going to be doing a tasting of 8 to 10 varieties down there. So it's great to be able to bring some of the work we're doing up in Sandpoint down to campus for students and faculty to taste and ask questions about what we're doing up here. So that's always a great opportunity. We have the upcoming Selkirk Pondere Food Summit, which is November 4th. I believe that's a Friday. And that's going to be a really special event. We're working with some folks down from Latah County that have been putting on food summits in their area for a while. And they have this formula down, it seems. But we're going to be having local producers, farmers and ranchers speaking. We're also going to have some people that work in our local food system in restaurants and markets that are utilizing local products. And then we're also looking at food access. So groups like Food for Our Children and the Bonner County Food Bank, letting people know what those groups are doing.
So just really helping people understand more about their local food sources.
Trying to connect with those sources.
Yeah, really interesting. Is that open to the public then?
So that's an event that requires a registration. Registration just opened up last week, I believe. You can visit our website and our Facebook page to find the link for that summit. I believe it's sp-food-summit.eventbrite.com, and that's how you can get registered for the event. I believe it's $35 for participants and $15 for students, and that's going to include a day of presentations, a lunch from Pack River Store, and then we're also doing something that I've wanted to do for a long time, but I've never had time to do, which is single varietal ciders. So when we put out our cider in the market later in the year, that's a blend of many different apples going into that cider. But what I've always wanted to do is press some of these varieties individually to get that essence of the individual apple. So I'm really excited to be able to do that.
Yeah, a little unusual. For example, the cider pressing parties I've been invited to, everyone just piles together all of the apples that they've been able to harvest and you get a mix. So that will be an interesting project.
Yeah, definitely. And with some of these cider specific apples, it's going to be a very complex, maybe a bitter sharp or a bitter sweet juice. But those are the ones that blend really well with like a Baldwin or a Snow cider. So I'm really excited for it. It's going to be neat.
Sounds like a fun experiment.
Yeah, definitely.
Sounds fun. Have we covered this or have I missed this, the Heritage Orchard Conference?
So the Heritage Orchard Conference is something that's is starting back up here soon. So we started the Heritage Orchard Conference in the spring of 2019, and that was an in-person event in Sandpoint, and that attracted around 75 people from the Pacific Northwest. I think the furthest person away was a professor from Wyoming that made the drive up. Since then, we had to pivot into a webinar series due to COVID and not being able to hold in-person events. And pivoting into this webinar series has really been a success for us. So that original conference, we had around 70 people attend. Over the past 2 years that we've been doing the webinar series, we've had over 1,500 people register for this. And that's from 27 different countries, which absolutely blew my mind. I didn't know that we were going to have that type of international reach, but it's really neat to see how passionate people are all around the world about these heritage apples.
Well, as we well know, apples come from all over the world. There's like no country that doesn't have apples, something like that. I know you've told me that in the past, and it is one of the benefits of the pandemic. We've been able to learn other ways to reach out to people and really just reach people from all over the world.
Yeah. And when we had our in-person conference, it was mostly speakers from the Pacific Northwest, and being able to branch out and include speakers from all over has really been a real pleasure. Our first webinar of this series is actually tomorrow. It starts at 10 o'clock Pacific time and runs through around 11:30. You can still get registered for that. That's a free event. You can go to uidaho.edu/orchard-conference and you can get registered there. But this first one, I'm really excited about. Our presenter is John Bunker, who is really a legend in the heritage apple community. If you talk to people anywhere around the U.S. about heritage apples, there's a good chance they're going to know the name John Bunker. And it's really been a privilege to get to meet with him and talk with him and be able to call him my friend now is really exciting.
That's a wonderful extra benefit, and you will learn, and he will learn.
It'll be definitely great. Yeah.
He's not the guy. I know I'm forgetting this man's name, the one who runs around looking for heritage apples.
That's David Benscotter.
Yes. Thank you.
David's with the Lost Apple Project, who we work with quite a bit, and we're actually talking about planting out some of these varieties that they found that were thought to be lost in our orchard here in Sandpoint, just mostly as another point of preservation for them.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a fun adventure and to be able to try some apples that we might think have disappeared?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Really fun. Well, as we're coming to an end of a really interesting interview, is there anything we're missing? Anything you'd like to add, Kyle?
Not that I can think of. I think that mostly covers the events that we have going on. I'd encourage everyone to come out and taste some apples at our apple tasting this upcoming weekend. Just like Julie, you're probably going to find your new favorite apple.
I really did. And it wasn't, you know what, it wasn't Honeycrisp, even though I know that's a big one that was developed in Minnesota. I thought, well, maybe it'll just be one of the big commercial varieties, but it sure wasn't. It's been fun.
Yeah. Yep. And having access to all these different varieties is really, really a unique opportunity. So you'll be able to tell everybody about all the apples that you got to taste.
Yeah. It's really a worthwhile event, everybody. If you're free this Saturday and you like apples, it is not to be missed. So I will give it my full support. I love it. And I hope I'll see you out there, Kyle.
Oh, definitely.
Very good. Well, listeners, if you're just joining in or joined in partway through the interview, you are listening to KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. This is Julie Calamine. I'm one of the two Tuesday morning show hosts, and I've been joined by Kyle Nagy, who manages the U of Idaho Research Center here in Sandpoint. And it's a really dynamic, wonderful place. If you haven't been out, you might want to try and get out there this Saturday. We're going to go to a song break, and then I'll come back with a few upcoming events. So thank you.